Welcome to The Laws of Style, featuring conversations on creativity, fashion, and the law from the leading edge of our economy and culture. Hosted by noted fashion lawyer, Douglas Hand.
Hello, and welcome to The Laws of Style. I'm your host, Douglas Hand. And for this episode, we're joined by Chris Pirate, who is a visual artist, a creative producer, and candidly, an emerging menswear style icon. Chris, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, man. I'm mad excited to, you know, just talk art, talk fashion, and kick my perspective, my point of view on it all. Thanks for listening.
Let's start with that. Tell us about your training as an artist, and really how your art has become refined and distinctive to you.
I'm not necessarily classically trained, right? I've been an artist since I was 5 years old. It was the first thing I was ever, like, told about myself, you know, is that you're an artist. You know, it was recognized pretty early by my family. So I have a perspective about art and being an artist that differs from what a lot of people have. Because I did eventually go to art school, and I realized that people are trying to achieve the goal of being an artist. And I don't think that's realistic. I think artist is just a type of person, type of how you think, you know, and I've always been that, right? I did go to art school for about 2 years almost, and I dropped out. I got opportunities that kind of, to me, taught me more in experience than going to school, you know? I started designing for a brand. I was an illustrator for a book, you know, all while in art school. So it's just like, yo, like, and also it's very expensive. You know, I come from the hood, man. So it wasn't a thing where, like, it made sense to me to even put my family through, you know, at a certain point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, you know, I'm on the board of directors of FIT here in New York, which thankfully is a city and state institution making its pricing, you know, not like a private school. It is a more affordable education, but I totally take your point that some elements of being an artist are unteachable. They are kind of innate. I mean, when you look at the great artists, they had something in them which was unique and innate.
I don't find anything wrong with it, right? You know, I think art school taught me how to collaborate. It taught me how to be around other artists. It taught me how to understand that, oh, this is a universal mind, you know what I mean? It taught me, like, just being around other artists was very important. I just couldn't afford it, bro. And it was a private institute. And I also was naive to think, yo, I'm working in art already. Why am I here? You know what I mean? I'm not saying it was the best idea, right? But it worked out, you know what I mean? Thankfully, but I wouldn't suggest it, you know?
Well, look, the great artists certainly weren't Yale MFAs. I mean, it's there is something, I would say, unique to an artist knowing they're an artist, which cannot be taught. It's not like you're going to go to art school not knowing you're an artist and emerge knowing you're an artist in the way perhaps I went to law school, right?
Right.
Very different vocations, you know, and you're exercising very different parts of yourself. So let's talk about your brand. You have a leisure wear brand which integrates your signature illustrated patterns and imagery. Walk us through how you see apparel, you know, as a viable canvas for you, how you see it as a product for consumers, and perhaps, if you see it this way, as a platform for influence.
Yeah. Honestly, as a creative, as an artist, as a designer, I've found this shuffle to be very important to me, right? And very conducive to where I juggle, I guess, pop art, right? And then street art, right? And then design, almost like a cycle, you know? A life cycle, right? Like almost like a food chain. And when one starts to feel like work, right? It's like I cheat on the one that feels like work with the one I'm not supposed to be working on right now. And then I find this joy, you know what I mean? Originally, I said this when I was in art school, right? I was actually in color theory class. And I was mentally, this is where I was at. I was in all my classes, right? But mentally, color theory class was the one that I thought about in my day to day. And I started working for this company called Up Against the Wall, which is it was a streetwear retailer, right? Kind of pre-streetwear. It was a pivotal store that started in DC but expanded to LA. One of the first companies to carry LRG, 10 Deep, these brands. I happened to be already working there as a college kid. So it started to influence, right, the color theory conversations I was having, trying to figure that out. It was a really hard subject for me. And believe it or not, right, color is one of my main signatures now. But believe it or not, it was a hard thing for me. And I coincidentally became the graphic designer for the store's brand, right? And so that's the first art I probably got paid for professionally, consistently. They found my drawings, started putting them on the wall. I go to work and I'm like, yo, I don't like that. Because none of these drawings were ideal finished pieces. None of these drawings were meant to be seen. I wasn't happy with them. These are just sketches. I just hide it under the register. And they started putting them on the wall. Customers started enjoying it. And it kind of got me out of my comfort zone. And then that translated to the apparel once they had me design. And basically, it's the first canvas I really had was fashion. And I worked backwards. I worked backwards into professional canvases of illustration, mural, graphic design. But unconventionally, I would have never thought of that, right? I started in fashion. And so I never let it go as a canvas. I never let it go because it's my first. So even when I was more so blowing up more in the mural street art world, I always would make a merch collection, I would call it. I always kept some sort of fashion along with it. And then I got to the point where I was like, yo, I don't just want to do it in that way. I think I got contacted by an agency to do a Uniqlo collaboration. This is right before COVID. And because of COVID happening, they never opened the flagship store that they were going to open, that I was going to be the main artist for and all this. So, but I just kept talking to her. Tyco's her name, right? She represents New York Tokyo, which is a big fashion showroom that brings Tokyo brands to America. They work with Nigo, right? So I was a big fan of all that growing up. So when that opportunity came, even though it didn't happen, I just kept in contact with her and I let her know, like, I also do fashion. Yeah. Like, we don't have to just, maybe you can just help me figure this out. And so that's when I said, you know what? It's time for me to now, I've always kept a merch line alive next to the murals and for the fans, but now it's time for me to really approach this as art, you know, as its own thing. And I put my best foot forward and the ball hasn't stopped rolling for like since COVID, since 2020 is when I started that. So I see it as an important canvas artistically that allows people to engage differently. I'll tell you this. I'll leave it at this because I know that's long-winded. I aim to...
It's all the wind you want. No, this is...
Okay,
this is
no doubt. Content. No doubt. I aim to add an expression to your closet that you didn't have the access to before. I think fashion, to me, is very expressive, right? I've always dressed in a way that always has gotten attention. Very skate street early on before that stuff was like cool. That same company would source me for the information about these subcultures before they got big. So I learned early that you can say a lot with how you look and how you dress. Sometimes I'm not the most vocal person. I'm not the most, believe it or not, right? I don't like to project myself a lot. So dressing could kind of say everything I needed to say or majority of the conversation. That way, if a stranger does approach me, they already get a lot of me. So the first thing they would say is like, are you an artist? That came from how I dress. You know what I mean? And so it became important for me to see it that way. So now as a designer, I aim, right? Do I see certain people collect my work that I would never imagine the demographic that they're in? And that's why I said, okay, there must be something here that they're expressing something, right? Aesthetically or fashionably that these people didn't have access to before. Because I would never assume they would wear my clothes. They don't have anything close to it. But it's something that I look at it as like paint. You know, you can only paint with the colors you have. Sometimes you get that new orange or that you only had three colors and now somebody introduces orange and you're able to create something completely new that was inside you the whole time. So that's how I see fashion, you know, and the influence of it as an expression.
One of the great things you're articulating here is that as an artist, you are, in a sense, gifting non-artists with the ability to artistically approach their personal presentation. You are creating that new orange for somebody to have in their closet, or that new burgundy, or whatever it is, something that they perhaps couldn't envision, but now it has been realized, and now they can take it and pair it with whatever else they have as their own artist to their own canvas, which is so powerful and has got to be gratifying to you.
Amazingly gratifying, bro. If I could just give you one example, mm-hmm. Do you mind?
Not at all.
So I have this older Caucasian woman with like glasses. She looks very middle of America. Like, now I'm from DC, right? Like it's kind of progressive, right? She looks, and look, if she's listening, I don't mean this offensively, but she looks very, I don't know, like she has a very, very specific look to her that speaks to a certain demographic that I just didn't think cared about my work, you know what I mean? And you know, even her age and everything, you know what I mean? And I didn't know she was at my work. I didn't know she was at my events for a while. Because I wasn't realizing, like, yo, so I want to say the first time I noticed her, she was looking at my painting at this event I had. And it was actually a fashion and art event. We were allowing early retail for the fashion collection, but at a mural unveiling, right? At this place called Mikado. And she's in there and she's just looking at my mural. So I speak to her. I speak to everybody. I like different types of people, right? I didn't know they liked my work, right? So I speak to her and she's like, yeah, like, I can't wait for the bag to come out. And I'm like, huh? And she's like, yeah, I have your puffer coat, but I know I'm waiting for the matching bag. And I'm like, huh? I thought she was just an onlooker because it's also a fine dining restaurant in DC. So there are a lot of people who are outside of my typical demographic that I would assume. So, you know, she, in a flattering way, she gives me, you know, like a librarian or something like this. You know what I mean? Like in a flattering way, right? And so, bro, like to the point where I'm painting another mural in the middle of the city and this girl collects my work, walks past. She's another girl that's not in my typical demographic. She walks past, but she's very vocal about it. Right. She's a production. She works in Hollywood. Right. So we know each other now, but she collects my work and she's not my typical demographic. She's actually walking past with my jacket on already. And guess who? And she's like, can someone take the picture? Guess who's there to take the picture? The same woman from the past event, because she's came to this mural. And I'm like, you know, it's a city. There's a lot of people and people who are very archetype presentation, you can lose them, right? You know what I mean? And so she gives her phone to her. And I said, wait, is that you? And she's like, yeah, she was just going to take the picture and just observe. I'm like, yo, and I told her, I said, yo, this is crazy. Because you two collect my work and it just blows my mind. And like, you know? So I was like, yo, like, I just told the other girl, like, you won't believe, like, she's one of my biggest supporters and she comes to everything. And she's so quiet that she doesn't make herself known, you know? And yeah, it's just one of those things where like that's what I started to see. Like, I don't think these people had a chance to express what my artwork does for them before, but it's part of their person and it's important for them. That's why they collect it, why they keep coming, because it's allowing their personal circle to see something about them that they were never able to show.
That's amazing. Well, so let's continue to talk about your customers. I mean, you also have a large and fiercely loyal following among celebrities and sports figures, particularly in DC. Is that something that you courted specifically? Because obviously it can help promote the brand, or did that just happen organically?
100% organic, bro. At this point, everything has been 100% organic. You know, we're trying to get a little more intentional, right? We're in the game. We gotta like adjust, but everything to this point has been 100% organic. And I say that in the way of basketball. Let's go basketball. I happened to paint a mural in DC that's kind of like became like the flagship entry into the city mural on New York Avenue, a major intersection. And it just says Washington, right? But I spelled it in my flowers being the words of the negative space, right? In, as the flowers are flowing. And I used the old Washington Wizards W as the shape, as the inspiration for the silhouette. And what happens is everybody starts adding the Wizards on my comments, like, yo, you guys need to have him do a jersey. You need to have him do a jersey, right? And I'm like, you know, like, they had reached out a couple times, right? Like, to connect. But, you know, like, I don't control those situations, right? They reach out. Companies reach out all the time. Doesn't mean there's a fit, especially in that moment. And so I noticed the one person commenting back responsibly, she represents the Wizards, right? Like, and she was giving responsible answers, like, yo, give us time. We're trying to work the right fit. So I'm like, huh? So they shout out to Sax Booker. She now works with LeBron and these people. So she brings me in, and they happen to be working on a cherry blossom jersey, bro, which is crazy, right? So when I tell you organic, organic. And, you know, when I come in, I'm just like, I'm being honest. I don't really like this. I think you could do better here. And they're like, well, how about you design the whole collection around the jersey then? We don't go with the Nike product, we go with yours. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to do stuff that I know the city will really love, but I don't, for whatever reason, you guys don't do this stuff. So you might not, you might have a resistance to it. You know what I mean? And so it was very organic. And then that led me to be in a lot of circles amongst athletes, because I get invited to stuff like, I've done talks with Jeff Hamilton, right? You know, like things like this where league fits, you know, we're around these circles. So I get to be around athletes because I'm one of the only people doing what I do for a team. So I get invited for all these talks, and then I get invited to NBA Con. So more and more athletes kind of surround themselves with me, and then they start to identify with it. But I'll give you an even better example of just celebrity. If you go to my page right now, I have this pinned on Instagram. If you have this pinned video with Kodak Black, right? Wearing my jacket, right? And then on the other side, I think it's Corey LeRae, right? But Kodak Black, both of these are extremely organic. Kodak Black, I was doing my second year as a featured brand at Complex. And we're about to close the booth up. Right, my guys are packing everything up, and this young lady who comes, and she's like, she just buys one of everything, right? And then I had just dropped my first independently designed and produced shoe, so she buys one of absolutely everything, and she says on her way out the booth, after purchasing it full price, all that, she says, Kodak Black might wear this, and I'm like, so as she walked away, I go flag her down, like, hey, excuse me, like, what did you say? And she's like, Kodak might wear this. I don't know, because he only wears what he likes. So I'm like, I don't even know if that's real, but it seems real because you didn't ask for a discount, right? So, like, I'm kind of confused, right? Because people say stuff all the time, right? You know? So shout out to Anna, because it was very real. Because one of my staff, right, he asked, He's another artist, actually. He came to help out Diego. Shout out to that guy. But he asked to go watch Kodak because he says his favorite art. So I'm like, go ahead, bro. We'll close up. And he just starts calling, blowing my phone up. And I answer. He's like, he's crying. He's like, bro, he's wearing your clothes head to toe. And I'm like, what? So I couldn't even see it because we were doing stuff. And I'm like, yo, what is going on? You know? And similar to that, to a lesser extent, the Coi Leray thing, I just found it in my tag photos, right? Like, I approve my tags. So every once in a while, I'll go look. And I saw this and I was like, yo, what is this? And so I tried to contact the designer. I mean, the stylist, because they had put rhinestones and I guess, or Swarovski crystals on the design. So I was confused at what I was even looking at. I'm like, yo, is this a bootleg? What is going on? Right. And then I saw that, oh no, it's my work customized. And so I was just like, yo, this is nuts, man. You know, so all of it so far has been organic, man. Like there's a rapper who you'll probably hear of soon. His name's FTO Set. And he goes by Set. He's under Gucci Mane's umbrella. And he's been just keeping in contact with me. He's bought a lot of my stuff from a store in Memphis. And we're probably going to start working together. But he just buys my stuff. You know what I mean? And it's like, yo, I want to support
more organic than that.
Yeah.
Because you know, in the industry, you know, people pay for those placements. And it truly speaks to people's desire for your goods that they're not asking to receive them for free, and in fact they're not asking their stylist to, you know, to get them for free. So that's fantastic. I mean, what do you think about that element of the fashion industry that does move the needle for certain brands around celebrity and influencer and seeding it with money?
I don't mind it at all. I just had a conversation with the agency that does that yesterday. My project manager, but guess what? They happen to be fans of my work. It was through them coming to, you know what I mean, being fans, right? So I love when it happens like that. But even though it's a very strategic partnership, I don't mind it at all. Like, I'm trying to catch up. I'm trying to get more intentional. I don't judge it. I don't mind it, right? I think I'm very lucky to not have needed it so far. You know what I mean? But I think this is the lay of the land, man. And the type of impact I want to have two different impacts as an artist and as a brand, right? I've been inspired by both. I've never seen someone do both to the capacity that I would like to see. So I strive to be that, right? So I feel like I benefit from the organicness because I'm also a brand and I'm also an artist and I'm a personality, so people can reach me, or you know what I mean? I think it just makes it more accessible. But as a brand, I think that's important. A brand can't be out here touching everybody. A brand doesn't have a face. A brand doesn't have a very specific personality. So whoever's representing the brand may not be the person who's going to have that organic relationship with FTO Set, you know? So I think as a brand, it's important. And I separate the two. To a certain extent, they benefit each other by separating the two. And I think as a brand, I'm trying to work more in that way. And I think it's interesting, right? But I think it's probably been in the game longer than we think, longer than the internet was around. I think, you know, this has probably always been a part of this. You know what I mean? So I just think it's a natural way, right, to get to your demographic. You know what I mean? Even though it's strategic, I think it's natural. In the industry, I don't shame it.
Well, look, people, consumers, I shouldn't say consumers, many of them need shortcuts, right? And if that is, I view Russell Westbrook as an avatar of the style I want, then I look to him and I look to what he's wearing and I try to parrot him in some way. Or if I'm more conservatively minded, I'm looking at somebody else, right? But it's a shortcut. It's like a hack, because a lot of people, unlike some of the people that, you know, it seems are gravitating to your brand organically, a lot of people just don't want to think about their style choices that much. That's why stylists have such a great job. You know, I mean, a lot of these guys and women aren't even really dressing themselves. You know, they've got a really cool stylist who's doing it. And there's a bit there as well. But I guess let's touch on, you know, the Wizards and basketball. I mean, basketball players are kind of a dream fit model, right? You got this 6'6 guy who's 195, right? I mean, he could walk any runway on the planet.
And, wow, think about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, they are. And you know, he kind of walks a runway each night he plays because the cameras are clicking when those guys walk in, right? They know it. And you've got one guy on your team who used to be on my team, who I miss greatly, Kuz, who is, you know, he's a great player, great guy. He was part of the glue for that Lakers team. They should never have let him go. But that's a podcast. Yeah, subject for
no. They should have let him go because he loves DC. I'm happy we got yeah.
Well, and LA still loves him, which is great. That's a great testament, you know, when a player can be loved in the city that, I mean, in this case, he didn't leave it. They jettisoned him, which was a bad move. But in any event, how do you feel about, you know, this now collaboration? I haven't even, you know, told the listeners, but they probably know about it. Your designs for the Wizards, how long that collaboration is likely to last, and, you know, how it sort of afforded you this access to the NBA.
Yeah, man. You know how it happened, how it started, right?
Yeah.
But I think another reason why is been able to grow so far is that when I collab with people that are really, there's different levels. I've collabed with brands that, you know, felt very, like, people don't know. I did a Nike in, like, 2018 or 19. It's before I probably should have done a Nike, right? That's why people don't know about it, right? But it was cool for where I was at. But the connection wasn't there, of course, right? You know, I was in kind of like an incubator program, right? So, you know, that's different where I have limited access to models. I can only do but certain things. So I really couldn't be too expressive. Mm-hmm. But I have a different relationship with certain type of collaborators that allow me to have room to talk. And when I do have room to talk, I'm just honest, bro. Like, it's a very DC thing. We're very outspoken. It's a very political city. So we, you know, we use our words wisely. You know what I mean? And when it came to the Wizards, I was just honest from jump. You know, like, I didn't like certain things about the jersey. I didn't like, you know, I wasn't coming in there strategically, like, yo, I need to say everything they want me to say to be able to have this opportunity. I didn't think like that. I thought as a fan. I grew up in DC, bro. Like, the Wizards were a wild up and down ride my whole life. You know what I mean? And so as a creative, I've always envisioned things of how they could do it better. Always. As a kid, bro, I did this. You know what I mean? So One of the things I said was, like, I thought there was a rule why they don't have a wizard. Because I'm like, it's called the Wizard. So I'm like.
And a wizard is like a cool, like, you can play the wizard so many different ways, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And they kind of got, they had, you know, that one thing, but more of a graphic icon, right? That was like, you know, in the Jordan era and all that, right? Like, in the Gilbert Arenas era. That wizard was more of a.
Yeah, you didn't see crease lines on. He wasn't like Gandalf, man. It was and a little sparkle coming from his wand was kind
of. Yeah, it was more of a, and it was a W, in the chest. It was more of a graphic play, on implying a wizard than it was a wizard. There was no personality to it, right? So, and they've never had a wizard as a mascot, which I just didn't understand. So it was like. Because maybe if they had a mascot wizard along with that, it would have brought that thing alive, more of the character. So,
ooh, dude, they got to have like a dancing wizard.
Bro, watch. There's
got to be. Who's that guy that dances in the garden? We got to talk to management. That's
Just wait, bro. No. Just wait, bro. I'm working on it, bro. I'm working on it, right? So, one of the first things I did was like, yo, like, hey, like, I'm an illustrator. I'm going to need to make a wizard. I didn't know if they were. And they were just like, sounds good. So I was like, all right, okay. So what I did, if you look, I created a brown skin wizard, right? Which I knew, I don't know if they were going to feel comfortable with it. I didn't ask questions, you know what I mean? I designed the wizard that I knew the city, DC Chocolate City, and even as it gets more transient, people love the idea of go-go, the original music of the city, right? Like this very, even the transients love the idea of what DC is at its root. So I knew that it wouldn't bother the transients, right? But what happens oftentimes is that people do things with the transients in mind and it bothers the natives. So I knew that, like, if it plays into the strength of what DC was, this is why people come here. They like it, you know what I mean? Not going to scare them away, right? But it will make the natives proud if I do something that represents them. DC was called Chocolate City before it was Bloom City, you know? And so I wanted to speak to both. I already have the bloom. Everybody knows, associates me for flowers. So, like, but I want this wizard to feel DC. I wanted to have an attitude. I wanted to have a mysteriousness that politics creates, right? This is why his brim is like that. You don't see his eyes. You know what I mean? So graphic, I tap more into my artist side to create this icon, and then I play it back into fashion. You know what I mean? I'm able to play in those two worlds, right? So I would look at Spider-Man, Batman, these characters that everybody identifies with because you can't see their face. You know what I mean? Right. So like, yes, skin, you can see the skin complexion of Batman maybe, but it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Nobody cares that much. When you don't see the eyes, right? It's everybody still identifies with it. That's why I was like, doesn't matter if this guy's brown. You can't see his eyes. Everybody identifies with it. You know what I mean? Just like Batman, you know what I mean? It doesn't stop a black kid from loving Batman or feeling like they are Batman because you can't see his face. Yeah. So I think I'll get back to the question, which is how long is this partnership too? It's an ongoing thing now. It was only supposed to be that collection. And now we're forecasting years, bro. You know, we're already in year two actively, but we're in planning for year three. But we're also we're going through figuring out how they can allow me to plan as an outside entity, currently at least, right? Mm-hmm. I do creative direction with them, but yet we haven't married it yet. We're trying to figure that out. Everybody thinks I'm the creative director, right?
Well, I'm sure you saw, you know, like Ronnie Feig being announced creative director of the Knicks, and that's become more of a thing, which makes perfect sense because merch is big business, but merch is blah, you know? I mean, I think they would be wise to further engage your services, but that's one man's opinion.
And they're trying, they've been pushing it for a year, bro. It's just about making sure everybody understands what it looks like. And so what I'll say is, like, I think my partnerships benefit long-term because I'm honest and I'm upfront and I'm transparent and I think people can see that my goal isn't just to become huge off your platform. My goal is to create something that your platform didn't have before that people are going to really enjoy. You know what I mean? And I'll just end with this. I have similar relationships, right? About to start with the high-end restaurant chain was becoming more of a chain now, but high-end New York restaurant, Philippe Chow, right? We can already tell we're going to work together very long because they can handle creative input and creative thinking huge and it works like that. You know what I mean? And so when I'm able to do that, right? Because I told the wizards, I'm telling a story. The character was introduced. When you get to, they need to have the dancing wizard. You know what I mean? I hope we get to that part of the story where they're the dancing wizard, you know? So yeah, that's how they become. I think that's how my relationships become long term.
Well, you may not know this, but you know, and you'll pardon the pun, you jumped through multiple hoops in connection with creating that because every team also has to get NBA approval for any merch. So NBA obviously saw your designs and cleared them, which is great and fantastic. And I do love that wizard with the, you know, because like you see, he's already doing magic, but you created that through a static image that involves the basketball too. So it's just like, you know, it was, I thought, just pitch perfect.
Thank you, bro. Thank you.
Let us pivot a little bit. What contemporary brands do you like from a design perspective, whether they're luxury, whether they are leisure? What's, you know?
I wear a lot of skate, right? I wear a lot of also local. I like that DC, DMV, right? DC influences the larger DMV area, right? For people who don't understand, right? And I've experienced parts of all of it. You know what I mean? I'm from DC originally, but I've experienced art school was in Virginia. I went to high school and part of my high school years were spent in PG County, right on the outside of where I'm from in DC. Okay. Right. So the larger DMV actually has a big footprint in almost every industry. And I get upset that people don't know, you know, like when you associate New York, right? Music, rap, hip hop, you also associate it with the brands that came out of that, right? There's one continuous message or linear message of how of a city's vibe. And DC doesn't get that because I think CNN outperforms all that, right? But from Kevin Durant to Dave Chappelle, you know, we have a huge influence. We have some of the biggest people in every industry. You know what I mean? It just doesn't, you don't connect the dots, the similarity of Kevin Durant and Chappelle. They're very similar personalities, right? You don't know that they're from the same place, so you don't start to contextualize the area and the vibe of the area, right? So I aim to change that, right? So part of the reason why is because we also have a big presence in current fashion. And I'll say that with more in skate, right? But one of the bigger skate brands right now is Carpet Company. And they're out of Baltimore, but they're heavy in Maryland in general and in DC. And the other one I'll say I wear a lot is Stingwater, who's also I think he originally was in Virginia, you know what I mean? But he skated out of DC. Okay. And both of these companies have Nike SB collabs, which blew up huge. They have their own Nike SB shoe, you know, which resell for crazy amounts. So I wear them a lot. There's another guy, Vandy. Vandy the Pink, he's blowing up right now. He's from Virginia, and he's very DMV-centric. And I wear those guys a lot, you know, because I try to communicate where I'm from on a larger level. I'm going to look around real quick. I wear a lot of, I wouldn't say it's probably not contemporary because it's not current. But I reference a lot to the early days of where the Japanese and American streetwear were connected, right? I'm influenced heavy by that. That's also nods back to DMV. If you look at Pharrell, he shouts out DC is a big influence on him, Go-Go. And Pusha T, the Clips, right? But yeah, I reference a lot of that era because growing up, NERD, Bape, Nego, the Clips, that was huge to me, bro. Because as an artistic kid who also was into skate and a certain vibe, to me, Bape is more illustrative than it is a fashion brand. It's more of an illustration brand. You know what I mean? And these, to me, were the first times that characters were embraced. Graphic characters were embraced in high fashion since. So I wear a lot of that. I think it's a good... I try to wear... Again, I try to communicate for myself through what I dress, right? So if you're a fan of what I do, you'll probably understand the influences by what I wear, right? I wear some Louis Vuitton to go on a higher extent, right? Or just another extent, right? I don't like to say high, low. I know price point for sure, but you know, I think we're all communicating to the same people at this point, right? So I like the new Prada, new direction of Prada. I like what they've done with the I'm a very moccasin type of guy. I like moccasins, I like work boots with the moccasin front. So I in Tokyo I grabbed those new Pradas that have the moccasin front but they have like this crazy sole. It looks like a video game shoe. Yeah. You know, yeah, I know. I had to get those. I probably haven't even worn them yet just because it's like, I didn't even know what to wear with, but I shop like this, bro. I don't shop for outfits. I shop for paint, colors. I shop to just add a color. Doesn't mean I'm gonna use it right now, you know? But when I see that color, oh, now I can paint this picture because I have orange and I have green, you know? I didn't have both before. So I just try to accumulate the paint colors, you know? And so I shop, I guess, piece by piece. And I don't even think about, I just know the category of stuff that I'm, so yeah, I think high and low, that's what I'm doing right now, is a lot of DMV streetwear, right? That is global, right? But I want more people to know it all comes from the same place. So I try to be that advocate. I wear all that. And then, yeah, sneaker wise, I'm getting back into Jordans a lot. Retro. I like what a lot of what they're doing right now. And I'm also wearing a lot of Converse, and I say that. Hopefully they're listening. I have some potential conversations with them, but Converse, of course, you know what I mean? Like tried and true, and very skate. Oh. Right? Very skate and lifestyle friendly at the same time. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting you mentioned skate because we're of different generations. I mean, I was born and raised in the 70s in Southern California in Orange County, which is where Vans is headquartered. And Vans, for the longest time, was like the only skate sneaker because skate culture had not yet really proliferated. But let's talk about, you know, the labeling of fashion. And, you know, you've self-referenced as streetwear. Some may refer to your line as urban. How do you feel about that characterization? Do you think that it can be construed as a mischaracterization? Or do you feel in some ways, as, you know, as some would be concerned about, that it's personal to you? Because if I was designing your line as a white man, people might not refer to it as urban or street.
Yeah, I think they may still refer to it as streetwear, but probably not urban, right? So I don't like the idea of the urban, right, expression of it. I feel like I don't even think that's a real fashion category. You know what I mean? I think it's something that was created just to house something that wasn't understood, right? I think that eventually became streetwear, right? You know what I mean? But that's when more probably non-Black people started to entertain it, right? And then it became streetwear. So I like streetwear. I like it. Yo, I'm from the street, bro. Like, it's what we wear. You know what I mean? Like, and I think it gets as simple as that. You know what I mean? And I like streetwear. I'm not against that term. I know a lot of people rebel against it. I know there was a whole Virgil thing about streetwear dies or whatever. I don't think it's possible because the streets is where we all travel, where we all, you know, like, where the average person is able to see fashion is on the street, you know? And so you're going to be influenced and you're going to see a lot of people who are like, that's their day-to-day life. You know what I mean? Even if you're working in an office building, you know, you'll have to engage with streetwear because you got to walk from your car to there if you were in a big city. Maybe if you're in somewhere like remote, probably not. But I'm just saying in the places where fashion congregates the most, right? And where style congregates the most, right? I spent years in New York. You know, New York can help you understand streetwear a lot because it doesn't matter who you are. You're probably still riding the train because driving sucks. You know, so you engage a lot with day to day where, you know, some places people don't experience skate kids. Some places people don't experience eccentric dressers. Some places people don't experience artistic minds, you know, but in a place like New York, you have to experience it all. And so I love the term streetwear, bro. Like, I do think what I do is a little more elevated. I just don't like to price it that way, you know? I'm heavy with embroidery. I always hide things in the design. You'll see I do aim to be a more elevated only because I want people to understand that it's still art.
Yeah,
it's streetwear, but it's artistic streetwear, which I think you have the Murakamis and the Calls, right? Who have laid the groundwork for that. But I don't think that's, I think if you, pardon my French, fuck or F, if you got to blank that out, F, urban. I think the subcategory that needs to exist, which doesn't speak to the same thing, right? But I think streetwear speaks to that. I think the subcategory that I need to exist and people like me need to exist is artist-based or art-based streetwear, right? Or art-based design, right? Because you have the, like I said, you have the Murakamis, the Calls, and other people who are, you know, who are coming into that, but it hasn't been able to be sub-genre yet. Yeah. So I think that's what I aim to help flush out that as a category, you know? Because I don't want to be in high fashion necessarily, but I do think it's elevated streetwear, but more in an artistic direction, you know?
Yeah, which have often been called just sort of artistic, like Murakami, artistic collaboration with the brand. So it almost diminishes the artist and keeps them in that box of artist, as opposed to acknowledging that the garment, or in his case, and often, you know, the accessory is the canvas, and exactly. You know, a challenging canvas, but one that
and I think part of that is because they're not often known for having their own fashion houses or fashion brands, you know.
Yeah.
Like and so that's why I've always kept both. It doesn't matter if my art was bigger than my fashion, which pre-COVID it was, right? Now you probably say my fashion is bigger than my art, you know? And I always want to keep that juggle going, because I want to help create that idea of that lane, you know? I think it's important. I think this could be people who only wear that if they knew it was a thing, right? Like, maybe they only want to wear Murakami Calls and a few others. And you can. There's enough pieces. They put enough pieces out there that you can. So if you can do that, then that makes it a subgenre to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's so many more questions and so little time. So let's maybe just quickly on cultural appropriation, because I think it's related to this labeling. You know, my neighbor up in Harlem, Dapper Dan, and my client, Dapper Dan, you know, he was the blatant knockoffs that Gucci... and the ironic knockoffs, candidly, because he was taking their trademark, but it's because they wouldn't sell fabric to him. But then right. He made these wonderful designs that they riffed on, 20, 30 years later. The artist Adam Pendleton, who, you know, has kind of a spray paint based artistic quality in one of his lines was, let's just say, sampled very, very heavily by the brand Alexander McQueen. So, you know, how do you feel about that when there's no acknowledgement? Gucci ultimately acknowledged that they were riffing on Dap and, in fact, you know, helped him build an atelier up on 123rd Street. But in the case of Mr. Pendleton, no. McQueen and the design team there said that they came up with their creations independently, which I'll show on the screen for our viewers. But... How do you feel about that kind of appropriation? And do you think that the appropriated, you know, either get elevated by that or that they are diminished?
Got to collaborate, man. Got to. I have a philosophy that, like, I like look into it and think and use in life, where I think people try to often, people get things like this wrong when they try to mimic the end result alone, right? Where you're missing so many things that are considered, right? When you're actually doing it for an actual reason, right? So if you're trying to mimic, let's say, Dapper Dan's outcome, you're gonna miss so much of why it's done, and which is why you go wrong marketing and things like this. You don't understand the reason why he was doing it. So you try to get the end result. You know what I mean? It's important to work with artists specifically, because we're almost never driven just by the end result, right? So when you do mimic this process, you miss a lot. And part of the reason why we were doing it was to prove a point. Maybe the end result wasn't even the thing, you know what I mean? Maybe it's to prove a point. And by you mimicking that, you lose the soul of it. You lose the reasoning, right? And it becomes very obvious a lot of times, you know what I mean? And, I think you just got to work with the artist, because you got to understand why the artist even did it. And that helps with your marketing plan. It helps you understand. So it helps, you know? So, I think you just got to work with the artist. Otherwise, And it sucks because there's a lot of people working for these companies, which is their job to come up with ideas. So they'll have me or people like me on their mood board, you know, and I can tell. It's happened to me a couple of times, you know, already. And they'll have us on their mood board. So maybe the guy who's the actual creative director didn't even source that idea. He just thought it came from the designers, you know? And so it does, it's a telephone game. I understand how it can happen, you know? But I think Gucci did the right thing. And I think once you find out, maybe the brand's unaware on a larger scale. But once they find out where that was originally referenced from, you gotta find the artist. You gotta work with them. Or I just think you lose a lot.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. And Gucci has a good track record of, you know, of acknowledgement. They, back when Alessandro Michele was the creative director, he approached one of our clients, Gucci Ghost, who was taking the Gucci G and juxtaposing one against the other and then putting one of those Pac-Man ghosts under it.
I remember that. Yeah, I know that. Yeah. Okay.
And they collabed. They collabed for about four seasons, and it was fantastic. And that's really the right way to, if you see something that is cool as a brand on your mood board, find out where it came from. And yeah, if there's a living artist, seek them out. And if there's a dead artist, make sure that, you know, the family and the trust, perhaps, that manages that IP is being acknowledged and paid. Let me ask you the question that really we've danced around during the entire chat. I mean, for you, what is the difference between fashion and style?
Wow, that's a real question right there. I think it's a tough question for me because I think I'm so on the style side that's how I come into fashion. I think fashion is more, I think there's probably the difference, I would say, of like, are you wearing something or is it wearing you? Right? You know what I mean? I think fashion is almost, it doesn't matter the person. You know, it's so strong, it's so independent in its expression that, right, those pieces are created, right, to almost outdo the person or speak for the person. You know what I mean? I think style is the opposite. I think style is something where the person is the barometer and the person is more, it allows, I think style allows stuff that are designed, like I would say my work is more of a style, right? I say my work is an aesthetic, right? Which is a style. So it allows you to kind of curve it around your, you know, your personality. So I think that's the biggest difference. You know what I mean? Fashion has its own personality where style caters to the person's personality. And I think both are awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we have certainly seen over the past decade a real confluence and fluidity of fashion between men and women. You know, it used to be very much that there's a men's lane, there's the women's lane, the buyers for those. We now have gender fluid offerings that are, you know, there are many, many of them. Do you feel that is just a trend, or do you feel that really is the future, which, you know, I'll sort of, I recognize that in the way past, there were a lot of gender fluid offerings as well. And in certain countries, everybody is quite gender fluid where, you know, men and women often wear like a sarong. And, you know, it's just part of that culture. But in Western culture, we have had this bifurcation.
Yeah, I think that's here to stay, I would think. You know, I think to a certain extent, right, culturally, right, it's important for people who, you know, feel a certain type of way to identify with something, right? I think that still does matter, right? You know what I mean? I think tradition still matters, right? But I think fluidity is here to stay. You know what I mean? I think we've reached a point where style is so important, right? To go to your last question, that, you know, more than tradition, a piece probably speaks to style, right? To where it allows that person to communicate. Maybe they're feeling more feminine or masculine that day. You know what I mean? But I do think tradition is important. I think there's a reason a lot of things existed, and I think it still has a place. right? I think traditional fashion still has a place in the society we live in. And but I think also we just reached a point where there's options and people have a lot to say. You know what I mean? Stylistically. So I think in order for even that to be significant, the tradition still has to be implied, right? You know, I think, let's say a dress is in traditionally feminine in America, right? I think for it to stylistically be important, it still should be acknowledged that it still meant that, right? Because maybe that's what the person's trying to say. Maybe it's a male trying to say something, right? But if you lose that traditional to it, and we just rewrite the past, then these things lose a lot of even the message that, even irony. Sometimes the irony is the message you're trying to, you know, trying to, you know, I guess say. And so you can't do that if it loses the original context. So I think both are important. But I think options right now in the way we live with social media, I think people have a lot to say. And I think it's important for how we're coping with how society's changing to just be able to express in a way through how we look. So I think both there's reason for both. But I think we're gonna stay here. I think, you know, the unisex, I design unisex. I think we're gonna stay here, you know?
Yeah. No, that's great. The notion, the reality that garments are charged with legacy and meaning and history. And if you completely make them anodyne, then you can't say much through your choice of dress.
Exactly. No,
that's well taken. Okay, massive pivot and, you know, somewhat rapid fire. Because you've done so much work with the Wizards and NBA, I mean, I'm curious, what, putting the Wizards uniform aside, what colorways, whether it's NBA, MLB, NFL, like what teams' colors do you think? Because, you know, like some people, I got friends who are like, oh, Padres, man, I love that brown with that mustard yellow or what. Like, what for you? Give me your top three teams all time. And if you can sort of put them in an era, that's always appreciated.
I'm a sound biased here, right? But I grew up, it's not just working with them. I grew up with these guys. The blue and copper, right? It wasn't just the Wizards. It was the Capitals too, the hockey team. Okay. Right. The blue and copper to me, so regal, so strong, you know what I mean? But also still represented the brownness of the city through the copper. You know what I mean? And it, to me, it said nation's capital without saying red, white, and blue, the obvious, you know what I mean? I think it said nation's capital just through straight royalty. You know what I mean? So I think that was awesome. I like the Seattle Mariners. I've always liked them, right? Like, it's
colorful and, you know, yeah. And the Seahawks, they sort of both have that.
Yeah. I didn't realize that. I didn't put that together. You're right. Wow. Okay. Seahawks. So yeah, both. Right. But the Mariners, when I was a kid, that was when Ken Griffey, right? So that got to be seen a lot. You know what I mean? And so I was able to take that in. And when I would see those colors translated to his sneakers, you know, it's just colors you never saw that, like, translate into that type of, you know. So I just think those have always been strong. And actually, I'm going to say the Washington used to be the Redskins, the Commanders. But I like the original Redskins colorways. That burgundy, it was a very unique.
Deep. Yeah. I'm with you. That was a powerful, with the pop of the yellow was pretty powerful.
And very unique, right? Like, I don't see it. And still similar.
It reminds me of USC.
Yeah, I can see that.
Although I guess the Trojans are a little more gold and a little less yellow, but
yeah. And I think the Commanders still have a similar colorway, but it's a little more brown. And a little more gold now, right? But that burgundy and yellow, man, like, you know, I didn't even, like, it's a very contentious city when it comes to football. I didn't even grow up a Commanders fan just out of, like, conversation, right? Like, it was great conversation. Cowboys versus Redskins, that was a thing in D.C. So, but hands down, you put the two together beside each other, branding, Cowboys versus Redskins. The Redskins had the more in the Commanders. You know, they had the more vibrant, the more distinct, right, branding. And I just think also, I like that it communicated the brownness of a city, of Chocolate City. You know, I just think certain times where a city communicating things through colors is strong, you know, like, you know, I had never even realized until now, like, because I work with both of them, the Commanders and the Wizards, right? But both had that copper, burgundy, you know, thing going. And now just as a designer, I realized, oh, that was communicating a message, you know, whether it's subconscious or not, it was communicating a message. So I like stuff like that.
Yeah, no, you know, I've always admired Pittsburgh for having three major sports teams all with the same colors. And to a degree, I mean, in New York, we have more teams. But when you look at the Knicks, the Mets, the Islanders, and that the colors really of the flag of New York, it's, you know, I mean, you sort of get that there is a theme.
I did not catch that, bro.
Yeah,
because I always thought that the Knicks blue and, because just as a designer working with the NBA, I'm like, blue and orange is tough to work with, right? But now when you say the Mets, I forgot. I'm like, oh shit, I more so compare the Knicks to the Yankees, so I don't see that. But you're right with the Mets. That's where it is. Yeah.
No, and it's somewhat ironic because if you are a Mets fan, chances are you're not a Knicks fan, you're a Nets fan, because the Nets are in Brooklyn across the river.
Exactly.
It doesn't really line up, as well as the Islanders. So it gets a little, and I always find those teams like the Giants or the Rangers or the New England Patriots, like if your colorway is red, white, blue, and gray, you have not made any choice. Like that is just that is the choice of no choice, right? There's just no,
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. And this is why when you see me do the wizard, my wizard character, I use the old blue and copper. Like the current thing is red, white, and blue with the Wizards. You know, it's more hinting back to the Bullets. That's what they're doing. Yeah. You know what I mean? But you know, as my influence hopefully grows, you know what I mean? We can claim that colorway that was unique to us. You know what I mean?
Oh, I love the way you articulate it. Okay, so quick and rapid fire. I'm not rapid firing quickly enough. You're putting DC aside, because we have talked DC a lot, if you can. Mm-hmm. Your three other cities for personal style.
Okay. Yes. Easy. New York, Tokyo. Well, I'll start this. Tokyo, because it was Tokyo first. New York. And then Miami, surprisingly or not enough, because I don't think it gets enough credit.
Not too surprising. Right? There's a style there.
Okay. And people don't know that. And then, you know, things like Design District, which I think is the most premier shopping experience in America right now, you know, and I think because Miami's such a transient place, it's almost a hidden gem. It makes its money by hitting the people locally, and people don't even know that place exists, but you can get from, I say it's like Instagram fashion experience in real life. You can go to see what Pharrell just did at Louis Vuitton in the men's store. You can walk right down the street to an independent brand like Gallery Department and grab this stuff, like, and to, or Eric Emanuel or a Palms Angel or a Dior, all in like 6 to 8 blocks, you know?
Yeah.
So Tokyo first, because even before I ever went there, that as a kid, seeing the Virginia skate movement bring bait to America, and me as an artist seeing art on clothes is where the light bulb hit, you know? And then especially characters, and I was already influenced by Japanese, like anime and things like that. So to see a Japanese influence be the artistic style that influences a fashion wave, it's perfect for me. I was skating too. So Tokyo first, then New York, because I went there and I really, you know, experienced it. And then Miami. But don't sleep on DC, man. We were on New Balances since I was like a little baby.
Love it. All right. Well, Chris, we are unfortunately out of time. That's a wrap. It was really great chatting with you. Thank you to everybody for watching.
No doubt. It was a pleasure, man.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Laws of Style with Douglas Hand. For more information, go to our website at www.hballp.com. And you can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Hand of the Law. Thank you for tuning in, and stay stylish.